I know you may feel differently. That's fine. But what I'm saying here, quite simply, is this. The governments of the world are interconnected. They do talk to each other. They do communicate. You can call it diplomacy. You can call it one world governments. You can call it power players. You can call it people all on the same team. The point is that they are the haves, and they view their citizenry as the have-nots. Now, here in America, we're less of a have-not society than a lot of countries. But the point is they know that as natural resources begin to dwindle,
failed our stand back here at the Genesis Communications Library, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. It's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And and our guest this afternoon is Mr. William Grigg, formerly the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and today doing writing as an author, certainly working, putting up a blog site on a regular basis, and appearing on other radio programs, and right here on Radio Liberty. William, thank you so very much for being with us today. What would you like to talk about?
Dr. Stan, thanks for having me on again. I think, as has been our habit in recent months, we're going to have to talk about the economy, but as well, we need to talk about the fact that this is the fifth anniversary of the beginning of the most recent war in Iraq, which grinds on interminably with no plausible anticipation of it ever coming to an end. And I think it would be profitable for the purpose of our discussion and for the benefit of our listeners to talk about the connections between what's going on in the economy and what's going on with our foreign policy. And most of the people who listen to this program, of course, are by no means newcomers to the subject of the Iraq War and the larger agenda that it entails with respect to control over the energy resources of the Middle East and the political configuration that's being created now, where the United States, in concert with other nations, other national governments, I think is a better way of describing that, and multilateral organizations, is dividing up the world for the purpose of controlling the world through the United Nations or a successor organization of similar composition. But I think it's worthwhile perhaps to review some of the things that have happened and to talk about the fact that the price we're paying in terms of economic turmoil is in large measure a product of this imperial foreign policy and of the Iraq War specifically. It's been plausibly estimated that 1.3 million Iraqis have died as a result of the war, the invasion, the occupation, and the tumult and chaos that had descended upon Iraq. It's, of course, true that Saddam Hussein was a brutal ruler. He was immensely corrupt. He was somebody who was very inventive in terms of the hideous ways that he disposed of people who opposed his political design. And that's to be expected given the fact that he was a subcontractor for the government in Washington, D.C. He's somebody who was brought to power by the CIA, who was very lucratively supported by Washington as well as by Moscow. He was double-dipping from both superpowers during the early 1980s. There was a time when Biopreparat, the Soviet GRU's chemical and biological warfare agency, was helping to design Saddam Hussein's weapons program with respect to bioagents and chemical warfare. And at the same time, Saddam and his engineers were receiving engineered strains of various biological weapons from the United States, as well as support for his chemical weapons program. This is all subsequent to a decision that was made in the early days of the Reagan administration, the closing days of the Carter administration, to tilt toward Baghdad during Baghdad's conflict with Iran. And it's interesting to note as well that Donald Rumsfeld made his storied visit as an emissary of Ronald Reagan back in December of 1983, following a number of horrible atrocities committed by Saddam Hussein, including the mass killings for which he eventually was convicted of war crimes and hung a couple of years ago. That all happened in 1982, subsequent to an attempt on Saddam Hussein's life. That was the sentence for, or rather, that was the crime for which he was sentenced to die. That occurred before Donald Rumsfeld showed up with a handwritten message from Ronald Reagan. And as well, you saw if you were looking at the intelligence reports or headlines or some of the foreign press accounts of the time, where Saddam Hussein was involved in building biological and chemical weapons at the time. So this is all being done after the fact, if you will, with after-the-fact approval from Washington. And Washington went to great lengths to protect Saddam Hussein as he built up the horrible arsenal that he used against his own people in the 1980s.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment at Genesis. Right here.
The war on terrorism. Will it be fought overseas, or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in Place. Surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout. Developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
This is George Winkers Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our one-hour program airs weekdays Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and I think it's really very interesting. William points out that the trial of Saddam Hussein centered around the fact that there had been an attempt on Saddam's life in a small town, and so Saddam had all the men and boys executed in the town. But nobody has ever asked, well, why didn't they go after him for the gassing of the Kurds, as it suggested, between 10,000 and 100,000 people died there? Well, what about the gassing of the Iranians? Iranian military in violation of all laws? Well, of course, they could not bring those things out because the United States had actually provided the material to build the chemical weapons. I've talked actually to a Green Beret who was assigned to this Saddam's army to help them use the poison gas against the Iranians. They couldn't bring this out of the trial any more than they could bring out what was brought out in the book of Robert Baer called See No Evil, which we carry, where actually Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent operating in Iraq, in Kurdistan during the 1990s, point out that at least on two occasions, while the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam, at each occasion they were betrayed by our State Department. And as he said, he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe the United States was keeping Saddam in power. But we couldn't let the American people know that, so we try Saddam for one of his lesser crimes. Go right ahead.
Indeed, and we tried him, that is to say the Shiite tribunal in Iraq that was assembled by the United States, the State Department, and the United Nations tried Saddam Hussein, conveniently convicting him for that 1982 mass murder of the male population, that small city. And in doing so, they basically cut off the record of his crimes in a way that didn't permit him to implead the American officials and the American power elitists who were his supporters in subsequent years. They very conveniently created a script, if you will, in which he would stand trial for an offense that antedated a lot of the really horrible things he did with the active support of Washington and the financial support of the United States taxpayers. And I do think that that's an important thing to remember as we're looking back here on the fifth anniversary of the most recent Gulf War, that Saddam Hussein was a wholly owned subsidiary of the American branch of the power elite in coalition, if you will, with Moscow and with a couple of other powers. And it's also worth remembering that when Saddam Hussein attacked the USS Stark, when the Iraqi Navy fired, I believe it was a French Exocet missile, and killed, if I remember correctly, 37 U.S. sailors aboard the USS Stark during the Persian Gulf Patrol of 1987, which was an overt U.S.-Soviet joint operation. That's something not many people remember. That the Reagan administration tried to blame Iran for that attack. You had Iraqis spilling American blood in the Persian Gulf, and yet it was the insistence of the Reagan administration that somehow Iran was to blame for this. Then the following year, you had attacks on Kurdistan involving chemical weapons. And during this whole period, you had a number of instances in which Iran was attacked. Iranian conscript troops, people who were given the keys to paradise, supposedly, and sent out in waves of human suicide battalions to set off mines and things of that sort, as if it weren't bad enough that they were being prodded out into that type of a conflict by the mullahs in Iran, they were being attacked by Iraqi chemical weapons at the same time. This is going on, I believe, from roughly 1984 through 1987 or 1988. It was after all this ugliness happened and after the Iran-Iraq war ended in 1988 that the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, signed a national security directive that said that it was a matter of U.S. national security interest to continue funding the Iraqi regime and to continue the buildup of its military capacity and to arrange for technology transfers into the Iraqi military. That was signed by the first President Bush in, I believe, late 1989, just a year or so before the crisis that broke out following the invasion of Kuwait by Saddam Hussein over disputes regarding the charging and the possession of oil in the border area between Iraq and what had been a province of Iraq prior to the Sykes-Picot agreement back in the aftermath of World War One. Kuwait had that status prior to being sundered from the region that was used to create Iraq. These are all artificial countries. That's a very important point to remember as well. These were countries arbitrarily put together by the panjandrums of the power elite after World War One, when they presumed to be dividing up the world, and then they said, we're going to play this very stimulating game called self-determination. We're going to put these people into arbitrarily designed countries that have no organic composition, and we're going to make sure that we leave enough of these and fractious nationalities in each other's little square on the map so that from now into the foreseeable future, there are going to be border squabbles and ethnic conflicts of all varieties. It was a stimulating game that was created by Wilson and his associates back in the 1910s. We're still dealing with the aftermath of that almost a century later, and one of the interesting little permutations of this game was the conflict between Iraq and Kuwait over disputed oil territories. And Saddam Hussein, let us recall once again, was effectively given a green light to invade Kuwait by April Glaspie, just as North Korea was effectively given a green light to invade South Korea in 1950. And so when the predictable happened, suddenly the same Bush administration that had been throwing money hand over fist in the direction of Baghdad and doing its considerable best to build up Baghdad's arsenal, both conventional and non-conventional, declared that Saddam Hussein was a menace to world peace and security akin to Adolf Hitler, and we found ourselves gearing up for war in the Persian Gulf and stationing American troops in Saudi Arabia, which was a horrible idea for many, many reasons. And in order to do so, Dick Cheney had to browbeat King Fahd for a number of hours in 1990 in order to permit that to happen. Ironically enough, King Fahd was a little bit more sensible about that than people in the West. He knew what would happen if we had American troops stationed on the soil of Saudi Arabia. And he didn't want to see the resulting turmoil for, of course, self-interested reasons, but his analysis is pretty correct in terms of the effect that had in engendering and catalyzing Arab-Muslim resentment against the West. But this all happened in 1990, and you cannot look at these facts, cannot review these facts even superficially without coming to the conclusion that this whole thing was very carefully orchestrated. There was this desire to get the United States permanently entangled in the Near Eastern landmass and have our troops on Arab soil and permanently stationed in that region of the world, and have these conflicts that would be used as a catalyst for the creation of regional arrangements and a new global architecture that would eventually deprive us of our sovereignty while permanently entrenching this power elite with international control over energy supplies and the means to perpetuate their rule upon mankind into the foreseeable future. And that's really what's been going on in Iraq now for many decades. And it reached a new crisis point 5 years ago when, you know, behind this very carefully constructed barricade of conscious lies, George W. Bush, the son of the first Bush who got us involved in war with Iraq, manipulated our country into a war we should never have fought, and an occupation that's turning into perhaps the single biggest strategic disaster in our history if you examine it from the perspective of people who value our sovereignty and believe that our foreign policy should have something to do with protecting the individual liberty of Americans.
I certainly agree with you. And Joyce, the difficulty is that we've been fighting over there in Iraq for longer than we fought during the Second World War.
Indeed,
but
yeah.
What people
that's
must
right.
really understand is this is a no-win war. And it's like Vietnam, which was a no-win war, like Korea was a no-win war, like the Bay of Pigs invasion was a no-win invasion, promised the people air cover, promised them supplies, and then left them there to die on the sands of the Bay of Pigs. And it's a recurrent theme over and over and over again. One only has to read the speech that was given by General Ricardo Sanchez in October of last year, and that's my December 2007 newsletter. Read what General Sanchez said. The military has not been allowed to win the war. Our soldiers fight excellently. They're very good soldiers. We have a very good military, and we're in the process of destroying it because the people in control hate the military, and they certainly do not want a strong military that could oppose their move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion, and, of course, the New World Leader. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have a situation where the one branch of the government that has the respect of the people in this country for the most part, most people, no matter how passionately skeptical they are about the government, they're nowhere near skeptical enough, in my opinion, most of the time. They tend to trust and have a great deal of respect for the military, and the military is always called on to bear the brunt of bad or iniquitous policy. And the military is always put in positions where the decent people who enlist in the military for genuinely commendable reasons are corrupted by the missions they're called on to perform. Here we have them in a perfectly anguished paradox because they're fighting a war that shouldn't be fought, and they're not permitted to win this war that shouldn't be fought in the first place. And they're placed in a circumstance where basically the battlefront is 360 degrees. You don't know who is going to turn out to be an insurgent. If the charming young Iraqi boy who yesterday was greeting you and asking you for money or candy, tomorrow is going to come up with a suicide vest on and blow up you and your buddies. I have a really good friend who is a very close friend in high school. He was, as a matter of fact, the vice president when I was a senior class president of my class in Rexburg, Idaho, 20-some-odd years ago, whose sons, oldest son, is going to prison now. He was a Marine sniper over in Iraq in a circumstance just like I described. He was in a terrible urban environment where he simply didn't know who was the enemy. And he only knew that he had to protect his life and the life of his buddies. And so by doing so, he ended up in a situation where he committed a technical violation of the rules of engagement. He felt that he had to, because otherwise he and his buddies might be dead. and now he's been convicted of a war crime, and he's going to prison. When the real war criminals, of course, are the people who are being celebrated today, Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney. Mr. Cheney spent the anniversary fishing with the Sheikh of Oman. That's a really good way to spend the anniversary of a war that's claimed over a million lives, is to enjoy the hospitality of an oil sheikh on a fishing trip, while men who are much better than you will ever be are fighting and dying in a war that should never have been started.
Amen to that. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg right here at the Genesis Network. So don't even think about changing the dial.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of the counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network. And, of course, the tragedy is this war was planned long before it had nothing to do with what an evil man Saddam Hussein was, because we've been backing and financing Saddam Hussein, and we're still backing and financing the Saudi Arabia. And so Saudi Arabia is just equally as ruthless to Saddam Hussein. He's no worse than most of the other people that we've backed through the years. It's certainly a tyrannical dictatorship, but we finance tyrannical dictatorships in China. And we don't hear any objection to that. We financed the tyrannical dictatorship in Russia from 1917 until Russia supposedly, was destroyed in 1992. And then, of course, we set out to finance Russia again. We built up their ability to provide oil, to become the largest oil and natural gas producer in the world. We financed tyrannical dictatorships routinely. So why did we target Saddam Hussein? I think William is exactly right. This is the long-term planning to involve America in the Central Asia. And I really fear that this is a prologue to World War III. But go ahead, William.
I agree with you. I don't see that there's really a plausible way of getting out of that region right now without the people who sent our troops in there arranging a tripwire to be sprung that would lead to World War III, and that area of the world is uniquely replete with tripwires. That's one of the reasons why you and I and a number of other people who are conservative in terms of our morals and our theology and in terms of the way that we perceive the role of government, whether we call ourselves conservatives, paleo-conservatives, libertarians, or constitutionalists, a lot of us opposed the first Gulf War way back in 1990 because we understood the tropism that war would undergo in the direction of a catastrophic global conflict. We understood that there was no American interest implicated when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. We understood that he did not pose a threat to Saudi Arabia. There were doctored, phonied satellite photos that were shown to King Fahd and shown to American and international audiences, purporting to document that Saddam was massing his armor on the border of Saudi Arabia. Of course, that was not true. He had no intention of going into Saudi Arabia. The Kuwaitis who were invaded and occupied by Iraqi forces are certainly not the type of people I would regard as winsome or idealistic. The Kuwaitis are like every other group of people. There are good Kuwaitis and bad Kuwaitis. There are noble and generous ones. There are selfish and ignoble ones. The point is, they're no better, no worse than any other group of people in the region, but I remember very well how the propaganda mills of Washington and New York way back in 1990, 1991 were trying to make it look as if the Kuwaitis were these waif-like elfin creatures who had to be rescued by these idealistic bearers of democracy from Washington. We heard, of course, the accounts of incubators in Kuwaiti hospitals, rather, coming under assault by heartless Iraqi troops who had seized newborn infants from the incubators and beat their heads on the floor and things of that sort. All this stuff was made up out of whole cloth by Madison Avenue propaganda mills that have done a very brisk business since the Bush administration came to power. It's the same routine, the same objective here, which is, first of all, just in terms of the immediate benefit that accrues to people who are manipulating a country into war, there's a whole lot of money to be made through profiteering. You have this welter of no-bid contracts that are handed out to politically connected contractors, Halliburton, KBR being the most notorious because of the Cheney connection. But there's a whole alphabet soup of contractors who made out like Alibaba and his 40 thieves back in the days of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, the early days of the occupation, when he had bricks of $100 bills being shoveled off the back of flatbed trucks to all and sundry there in Baghdad. And then, of course, the way that the petroleum laws are being written by the supposedly independent Iraqi parliament ensures that you'll have pretty much the same system that existed under Saddam Hussein, but the biggest difference is that the control by corporate sources or corporate entities here in the United States and Great Britain will be more overt and more unabashed. You basically have the best of both worlds from the perspective of the power elite. You'll have a Saddam Hussein-style internal security structure that'll be brutal and authoritarian and probably a result in a body count not unlike the one that Saddam Hussein rolled up during his reign. And on the other hand, you'll have a less accountable, rather, mechanism here whereby the foreign corporate interests in the oil and the petroleum industry will be able to plunder the country unchecked, as long as, of course, they're in good graces with the people who are really running things behind the scenes. And don't underestimate one other factor that you probably discussed as well, Dr. Stan, and that, of course, is the fact that we're seeing the end of the petrodollar as a way of keeping this whole mechanism liquid. The petrodollar, of course, being the arrangement that was made in the 1970s through which Saudi Arabia would agree to charge for its petroleum in dollars, thereby dictating to the OPEC cartel that they would do likewise.
Hold that right there. We'll be right back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Hi, I'm David. And if you wake up at night to urinate like I was, then you'll want to take advantage of this special risk-free offer. If you have dribbling, burning, or pain during or after urination, then you may have a condition known as benign prostate enlargement. This is potentially serious and can get worse with age. So get regular checkups from your doctor and take advantage of this special risk-free offer on Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate contains natural ingredients that help support a healthy prostate, and it contains 3,000 times more beta-satosterols than ordinary soft palmetto. So it's powerful and it works. What's better is that Beta Prostate is a healthy supplement, so you don't need a prescription for it, and it's risk-free.
For your risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, dial 1-800-457-9914. That's 1-800-457-9914. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. That's 1-800-457-9914.
Since the year 2000, earthquakes, heat waves, droughts, tsunamis, floods, fires, and hurricanes have killed over 1 million people worldwide and forced tens of millions to go without food and water. After Katrina, the media was eager to show victims in New Orleans begging for food. If a disaster strikes you and your loved ones and you have no stored food, you'll be begging as well. Now our economy is slipping into an abyss that even Donald Trump says will make the Great Depression look like a Sunday picnic. The U.S. dollar is worth less today than it was even last week. Before food prices skyrocket, Rocket trucks stop running and stores close their doors, Survival Enterprises can help you prepare. They're master distributors of Mountain House freeze-dried food with up to a 50-year shelf life. Survival Enterprises has real butter, cheese, and bread, real beef, chicken, and turkey, all canned for long-term storage. For their website and more info, call 1-800-753-1981. That's 1-800-753-1981. And remember, if you wait until you need us, it's too late. Call now.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest, William Grigg. And, William, before we go on, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your blog and how they can get your book?
Sure. I appreciate that. The easiest way to find both is to go to the website of the Right Source. The URL for that is www.rightsourceonline.com. Once again, that's one word, rightsourceonline.com. That's a news page that I help edit. You'll find news stories and commentaries and links to videos that we consider to be important and worthy of your attention. At the top, there's a banner ad for my new book, which is entitled Liberty and Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State, which examines in detail our descent into what most people call a police state. I prefer to call it a garrison state or a homeland security state because we're dealing here with the emergence of a centralized, federalized, militarized law enforcement system, the purpose of which is not to protect our rights and property, but rather to protect our rulers from us. It's a form of military occupation. We once had in our country tens of thousands of independent, locally controlled police departments and sheriff's departments, as well as state police agencies in all 50 states. And according to the Constitution, the overwhelming majority, almost the entirety, of law enforcement is to be a state function. It's supposed to be controlled by the people in the various states and the local communities. And police under that regime, if you will, were people who lived in the communities they served and who saw their role as that of keeping the peace and being a conspicuous presence that people could recur to when their rights were under attack, when they were threatened by the lawless. Well, that's not the system we have today. The system we have today is one in which the police are turning into, and in some locations have already morphed into, they've completed the process of becoming an army of occupation, a subsidiary, if you will, of the Pentagon. And that's one of the things I talk about in my book. I also talk about the implications of the institutionalization of torture, the evisceration of the Bill of Rights, the steady destruction of common law due process guarantees that go back to 1215 and the Magna Carta that have been destroyed by the Bush administration, and how war has been used to bring about a lot of these changes. That's the new book, once again, Liberty in Eclipse. It's available through www.rightsourceonline. And the other thing you can find there is a link to my blog. It's updated between 3 and 5 times a week. It's called Pro Libertate, a Latin phrase. It means for freedom. If you go about a third of the way down the page and look at the left-hand border of your screen, you'll see my photograph. And there's a link there which will take you to Pro Libertate. And the purpose of the blog really is to infuriate people. I'll just cut it cleanly and nail it flush to the plank. My objective is to make people angry. As a matter of fact, I had a recent installment on my blog entitled Why Aren't We Furious?, which talks about what's going on right before our eyes in real time, which is the destruction of the dollar, the steady and escalating theft of the value of what we earn, what we have saved, what we've invested. If we were in a circumstance in which every single day or every single night, somebody who had access to our personal information were siphoning off steadily a percentage of what we have in our savings accounts, we would not rest until we found out who was responsible for that and put that person in jail or in the hospital or both. But that's what's happening every single day through inflation. Inflation is the most insidious form of tax. It's the most overtly felonious form of tax, if you will, because it's outright theft. It's the theft of the value of everything we earn. And when the Federal Reserve, the official counterfeiting arm of the regime that rules us, creates out of nothing several billion increments of what it's pleased to call dollars or money, by doing so they steal directly from all of us for the purpose of enriching the already unfathomably rich barons of Wall Street. The Bear Stearns bailout by way of J.P. Morgan Chase, I believe J.P. Morgan Chase is in some sense in an organic relationship with the Federal Reserve Board. That's a really good example of this perverse form of socialism for the rich, or a better way of putting this is just outright fascism. You have a public-private partnership called the Federal Reserve that is controlling, if not owning, these nominally private entities and using the power to tax and the power to regulate as a way of enriching people corruptly. But this is a really good example of the sort of thing that I talk about on my blog. Try to get people angry about the fact that these entities exist and they're transferring our wealth into the hands of people who are already wealthier than they could ever imagine being. Bear Stearns, this Wall Street investment bank, the fifth largest investment bank in the country, had its stock trading at over $160 just a matter of months ago, and $60 just weeks ago, and then $30-some-odd last Friday, and then over the weekend it was sold to J.P. Morgan Chase at a price of $2 a share for stock. And, of course, that meant that it was fundamentally bankrupt. It was a fraud. They were perpetrating a fraud on the public and on the investors and on the people who were involved in the economy. And you had just as recently as a couple of weeks ago, their CEO swearing up and down with a look of apparently guileless innocence on television, telling people that his bank was liquid, they had no cash flow problems. And, of course, at the beginning of the year, the CEO and most of the top echelon executives of Bear Stearns got billion-dollar bonuses. And we turn around here and we see how they're bailed out by us. but through the instrumentality of the Federal Reserve stealing from what we have earned. Why aren't people furious? Why aren't people incandescent with rage about this? So once again, just to tie this up in a tidy little bow, that's the purpose of my blog, is to get people to think about these things and get really angry about them. There's nowhere near enough righteous rage in this country, I believe, and I'm trying to supply at least some of that deficit.
Well, I think you're doing a good job, and we really enjoy having you here. And the American people have to understand that we are being robbed. We're being robbed. These people don't wear masks and carry guns. They wear nice suits and ties, and they talk very, very astutely, you know, and they're very gentle and nice people. But they really, of course, are part of a movement that is intent upon bankrupting this country, impoverishing our people, and transferring our wealth to other nations. They know exactly what they're doing. But the last thing they want is for the American people to understand what they're doing.
I know, just by way of elaborating a little bit more on that thought, this morning I was out shopping for bread. And, of course, if anybody shopped for bread recently, it's somewhat of a harrowing experience because the price of wheat has gone through the ceiling. Just a couple of days ago, I was trying to buy some wheat, and it was very difficult to get it. I mean, the wheat supplier that I buy from here, it was back-ordered because a number of bakeries here in Idaho and then in Oregon and Utah were completely out of flour. And so the price of wheat's gone through the roof, and that, of course, reflects the insidious impact of the inflation of the currency that we use and the price inflation that results. But as I was at this discount outlet for a major bread manufacturer, people were complaining about the fact that they were paying prices at this discount outlet that are pretty much the same as what they were paying at the regular supermarket, say, 6 or 8 months ago. I was telling them, get used to this. It's only going in one direction. While I was having this conversation, a man walked in who's on a fixed income. He's getting his Social Security as pretty much his only source of revenue. And he said he got a cost of living adjustment of something like, I think, 2.1 or 2.4% last year. And I said, well, you can be assured that the people in Congress who are responsible for diluting the value of our money don't get a cost of living adjustment of a mere 2.1 or 2.4% when they give themselves a pay raise. And they said, yeah, that's exactly right. And so there was a moment here, a teaching moment, if you will, where I can explain to people why it is that they are seeing these things happen. People don't think about things. They complain about them. They feel themselves growing frustrated as they see the price of gas go through the ceiling or the price of bread go to unreasonable lengths. And they see their grocery bill becoming more burdensome, but they don't understand why it's happening. They just accept it almost fatalistically as if it were an inevitability, like the change of seasons. Folks, this is not an inevitability. These are things that are being done to us. They're not simply happening. And that's why I'm trying to help people understand that it's something that is engineered by human beings. It's something that, with God's help, can be corrected by human beings.
Well, it's going to take the American people angry and willing to take a stand against this impending tyranny, and I believe we're moving towards a police state. We already have over 2.3 million people in prison and another total of 7 million people in prison, probation, and parole. Here in the United States, heaven's over in communist China with almost four times the population. They only have 1.5 million people in prison. What's wrong with this picture? When are the American people going to wake up and realize, of course, that what is happening is not by accident? They are stealing our wealth. They are stealing the wealth of generations yet unborn. And these are the nice people. And of course, those of us who complain just don't understand that this all has to do with making for a better world, to transfer our wealth to other nations. When are the American people going to get sick and tired of us taking all our money and sending it abroad and then not having enough money to even repair our infrastructure?
I know. That's something that a lot of people, once again, are dimly aware of, but they don't quite understand the genuine maliciousness behind the design here. And specifically, they didn't understand the role that war has played in this. And that's why when I talk about what's going on with the economy, I always try to find some way of talking about the war. You cannot have a $3 trillion war being funded basically on credit by the government without that having an immediate and dramatic impact on the quality of life and the standard of living of people in the United States. Every time you go to the gasoline pumps, and you're shocked by what you have to pay. You're paying a war tax. When you take a look at your grocery bill and you see the ravages of inflation eating away at what you've earned, you're paying a war tax. No, they didn't raise taxes overtly. Had they tried to do so, we could have stopped it. Instead, they paid it through deficit spending, thereby stealing it through inflation. And it's enriching the same handful of people. They're making huge amounts of money, or making huge amounts of wealth. I mean, the money is becoming increasingly valueless, but they're making huge amounts of wealth on the basis of this completely unjustified war. And that's a principle that goes back at least to the era before World War One. You probably talked before about Catherine Casey, who was a researcher examining the minutes of the Carnegie trustees, the so-called Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. They were examining the question, is there any means known to man more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people? They examined that question, and they came to the conclusion that war was the best way to transform an entire political system and transform the life of an entire public.
I know I actually interviewed Norman Dodd, who was exactly. Catherine Casey's superior there at the Peace Committee, and he tells that. You can hear him tell the story on my tape, my interview with Norman Dodd, both video and audio tape available in our four-tape set on the secret government. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this is an incredibly valuable historical chronicle that you've compiled there, because this is something that has been completely suppressed, ignored, and denied, but it's undeniable. I mean, the Carnegie Endowment, after examining this question, coming to the conclusion that war was the most effective way to transform the life of an entire people, they said, well, the question we have to examine is how do we get the United States involved in a war? And the result, of course, was U.S. involvement in World War One. And since that time, at regular intervals, with almost metronomic regularity, we've seen our country get involved in wars, the effect of which was further to centralize power in Washington, further to dilute the value of the money that we earn and enrich and strengthen this Federal Reserve System that really is the focus of all evil in the world, and further to alienate the United States from the peoples of the world, transforming our country from one that was almost universally loved and respected to one that is almost universally reviled. And so we're seeing how we're being manipulated in the direction of having a completely centralized, utterly collectivist system here domestically. And on the foreign front, because we're about to lose the illusion of prosperity that has ensured our ascendancy in the world, we're now the second largest economy in the world as of last week because of the falling dollar. The Eurozone is now the largest economy in the world. Socialist Canada, the typical inhabitant of that country, pays less in taxes than here in the so-called land of the free. We have a larger prison population, as you pointed out, than that of communist China, which is a society four times as large as ours, which is ruled by an overtly communist regime. And we're supposed to believe that somehow this is the land of the free, the home of the brave, and the hope of the world. Well, no. What's happening right now is that our future is being stolen from us in real time. Our children are being mortgaged, basically, as slave labor to pay these debts, because when we run out of other resources in order to make good the obligations of our government, they're going to turn to conscription. They're going to conscript people to use at ages 18, 19, 20, and 21, most likely, not only for the purpose of the military, but for the purpose of uncompensated labor to take care, for instance, of the aging baby boomer population, or to be involved in these great agricultural armies that Marx talks about in the Communist Manifesto. That's something we would almost certainly get under a President Obama, would get it under a President McCain as well. McCain is somebody who is overtly pushing for the return of military conscription. He'd probably go for the social element of it as well. But all these things are being planned for us, and what had been once the freest and most prosperous and most powerful and most influential country in the world is being prepared for a status as a second or third rate power in this emerging global system that would be more or less an elaboration on what we're describing here in terms of socialism in the economy and imperialism in foreign policy and the police state as a way of keeping people to heel. I don't know why people aren't furious about that, because it's no longer a question of trying to say that these are things that are being planned in some far-off, inaccessible, crepuscular cabal somewhere. You know, these are things that you can read about in our headlines, and you can see the tangible impact of them in your daily lives.
No question at all. And, of course, what we need to do is let the people understand that what is happening is not part of it, just an accident. These things are planned. Certainly, all you have to do is read the Earth Charter, as we've said many times before. And 10A of the Earth Charter tells about how they're going to have equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. And that means transferring our wealth to other countries. And where is the outcry? I've never had one person call in and challenge that statement or say it could not possibly be true. Why? Who would want to destroy America? And I'd like to suggest the people that like to destroy America are some of the most powerful and wealthy people in Washington, D.C. and New York.
Yeah, I've interviewed two of the people who were architects of the Earth Charter. I've interviewed Mikhail Gorbachev. It was a one-on-one interview. I was part of a press gaggle, if you will. And then I interviewed Stephen C. Rockefeller of the storied Rockefeller family, and they're deadly serious about the idea that we need to reboot humanity. We have to go away from the biblical basis of organizing society and embrace this new Ten Commandments for the Earth, as Mikhail Gorbachev, who last I checked is still an atheist. The Ten Commandments for the Earth, one that nobody would be permitted to violate. Stephen C. Rockefeller, I believe he's no longer among the living. He was a theologian of sorts, and he was somebody who believed in the idea that you have to have a new religious matrix for this new society. You know, one that would install and enthrone these wise elders of humanity. People like, well, as Lucky Hap would have it, people just like himself and Mikhail Gorbachev and Maurice Strong, you know, folks of that kidney. You know, people of endless benevolence and limitless vision. The people to whom we can entrust our future, you know, as if they were made out of finer and better stuff than the rest of us. And that's the underlying conceit behind all of these initiatives. They know how to manage our lives better than we do for ourselves, which is why we simply have to entrust them with our lives, with our earnings, with our children, with everything that God has given us. And that's one of the reasons why I, once again, find myself wondering how in this country that so prides itself on our conspicuous piety, where we profess to believe in God and to subscribe to the Bible as our standard of righteousness, why aren't we mad if, at nothing else, the screaming blasphemy that this whole thing represents? These are people who vaunt themselves as if they were literal gods. You know, they want to supplant God in the world.
Well, we're out of time, William. Thank you so very much for being with us. And
thank you.
And we'll look forward to having you with us on Friday evening. Bye-bye. God bless.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt
debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network. As far as Gorbachev being an atheist, let me suggest that a book we carry called Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary People by Wayne Peterson, who is deeply involved in the occult, and he writes about, of course, Gorbachev being deeply involved in the occult as well, his wife being associated with Sai Baba, and it's really rather interesting. Of course, I believe that what is behind the Earth Charter, what is behind everything, is these powerful occult forces. If you haven't read our three pamphlets entitled The Occult Conspiracy, let me suggest you get that. I certainly would want to get the book on satanic crimes and the 4-tape or 4-CD set that comes with that, or material on the supernatural, the 4-tape set on that, or certainly the book that goes with it called The Beautiful Side of Evil. We have a great deal of information here at Radio Liberty you're not going to find elsewhere. We carry books by acknowledged Satanists, people like Mandy P. Hall. Now, we don't list those in the regular catalog because we don't want to be accused of supporting it, but if you haven't read Mandy P. Hall's classic book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, his book on the secret destiny of America, certainly the other books we carry of his, why you need to get it, you need to understand that these people worship a different God. These people are involved in the occult. Many of them are in touch with the beings from the other dimension who were told in Deuteronomy to avoid, like the fire, were not to be in touch with the mediums or with the fortune tellers or with the people, you know, who are in touch with the other dimension, the spiritists, the witch people who are into witchcraft and sorcery. But they're there, they're very real, and increasingly they're infiltrating the Christian church. And you must understand that so much of what's going on, taking people into contemplative prayer or in meditation, this has nothing to do with Christianity. This gets into Christian mysticism, which is as old as Gnosticism and the Kabbalah. Kabbalah is Jewish mysticism, Gnosticism is Christian mysticism. But it all gets into mysticism and contacting the other dimension. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't been to our website, go there, look at the books we have available. Look at the tape sets that we have available. Do you know somebody with Alzheimer's disease? You need to get our tape set on Alzheimer's disease, because nothing's going to tell you what we will tell you about what causes it and what you can even do to help stop or slow the continual degeneration of the people. So certainly we suggest you go to RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs 9 hours a day on the Internet, or simply we listen to the live programs 4 hours a day, to the archive programs, the MP3 programs. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us support what we do, our number again, 1-800-544-8927. To understand the financial collapse we're facing, you need to hear my talk on the financial tsunami. You need to read the syllabus that we put together to go with that. You need the 4-tape set we have on the financial meltdown. I should not say we have a 4-tape set on the financial Armageddon. We have a pamphlet on the financial meltdown and another one on the history of money. And then we carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which you cannot afford not to have read. You need to understand what's going on so you can protect yourself and your family from what is about to befall our country financially. We carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. We carry Fiat Money, Inflation in France, which is a very, very important book, because it tells what happened in France in between 1789 and about 1799, after the French Revolution. And of course, what happened was they simply replaced the French king with a new dictator. His name was Napoleon Bonaparte. and plunged them into war after war after war and destroyed the youth of France. And that's what the wars do. They destroy certainly they destroy nations, and Napoleon Bonaparte destroyed the French nation. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels. Housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 and tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And for the next hour, our guest is going to be Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And we have David with us every month on this station because we think his message is so vitally important. Why are we having so much trouble today? Why? Because we have traitors in Washington, D.C., who've sworn to uphold the Constitution when they are inducted into the House of Representatives or the Senate, and then do everything they can to destroy the concept of limitation of the power of the central government. And the whole idea is to expand the power of government over our lives and eventually create a dictatorship in America. That was why America was different. America was different because the power of the government over the lives of the people was limited by the change of the Constitution. But they've taken the chains off of the politicians, and they're certainly forging them for the American people. We are moving rapidly towards a dictatorship. All you have to do is look around. When you go to the bank, they have their video cameras there. When you go to an ATM machine, there's a video camera there. The video cameras are in our schools. The video cameras are in the department stores. They're in our, certainly in our convenience stores. They're on our streets. Of the city, there are intersections, they're on the highways. They're taking pictures of people all the time. You go up on the internet, you can actually look and see pictures of the traffic in London where they're taking pictures. In London, the average person is photographed 300 times a day. This is, of course, what police states are already made out of, and the government has no right to do these things. But you see, we have people in Washington, D.C., who have a different worldview because they worship a different God, and they intend to have a dictatorship here in America, and they're in the process of doing everything they can to impose it. And the only thing that protects us right now is what the remnant of the Constitution. We need to reclaim our Constitution. We need to reclaim America. David Whitney, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always an honor to be on your show and be able to share these truths, because you're absolutely right. It's what's taking place in our land is an egregious violation of every aspect of our Constitution. You can walk through the Bill of Rights today and see that almost all of those Bill of Rights have either been injured deeply, and we'll find out here what happens in a couple months with the Heller case that was heard yesterday at the Supreme Court. Are they going to kill the Second Amendment or alter it or something like that, which they have no right to do nor any power to do? Any amendment to the Constitution may only take place by the means provided, not by some Supreme Court ruling or some executive order, but only by a constitutional amendment. And the American people need to wake up that the hour is very late, and it is time for us to rise up and take back our country, to return it to the constitutional republic that we were established as. And, of course, that can't happen until the American people understand our founding documents, have a good understanding of the Declaration. You really have to know the Declaration to have the why, basically, of why we have government in the first place. What is the foundation of that government? And so the why question is answered there in the Declaration, then the how, the technical details of how it's worked out, is answered in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the subsequent amendments.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand and the Constitution, and that's what the Institute of the Constitution is all about. That's where David works for, and he, of course, comes here to tell us about the Institute. And the purpose of the Institute is to teach the American people what you're never going to learn in school, what you're never going to learn in universities, what you're never going to learn in law school. The people who want a dictatorship hate the Constitution, and has done everything they could to conceal the truth about our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the future of this nation. Well, David, pick the story up there.
Yes, as many people know, the Federalist Papers were written to argue for the ratification of the Constitution. Therefore, they're a very easy way to get into the mind of our founders to discover what did they mean by what they wrote and what kind of government were they designing. So if you want further reading and research beyond the Constitution itself, the Federalist Papers are an excellent source for doing that. Let me just read a quote from Federalist number 51. It says, "The concept of countervailing ambitions, as well as the constitutional framework of opposite and rival interests, was designed to prevent tyranny. Each branch of government, as well as each level of government, is given power to serve as a check on the other branch or the other level of civil government." In other words, our founders were saying there's three branches of government, legislative, executive, judicial, but there's also four levels of government. There's the federal level, the state level, then there's the town or township level, county level, and then the local level, which may be a town or township. And there's four levels, and each of these levels is to serve as a check against the other and the powers of the other levels of government, as well as each branch serving as a check against that. But we wanted to start a series here of a new course that we're teaching at Institute on the Constitution that talks about one additional design our founders built into the system of checks and balances. And again, as you've mentioned, this is one of those aspects of our system of government that you will never hear in the court of law. Rarely you'll ever hear it in the legislature. In other words, the government doesn't want you to know about this because they recognize it has tremendous power to prevent tyranny from taking over our land. And that is the power of the juror. The duty of the juror is to defend the Constitution. But it's almost impossible for you to ever be told that by a judge or by an attorney in the law court. Well, to step back and look at the big problem in America, most people know that America's courtrooms are just a place that you want to avoid like the plague. They're not a place where you're typically going to find justice. In fact, there's a number of books out now which either directly refer to in their title judicial tyranny or tyrannical judiciary or imperial judiciary, a number of books out because people across our country are recognizing that our court system has completely gone berserk. It's completely out of control, and it is never a safe thing when judges begin to rule as tyrants. They're not accountable in the same way that the elected officials in the legislative and the executive branch are, and therefore it's more dangerous when there is no direct check on their power.
Hold that thought right there, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and David was talking about the concept of jury nullification and the fact that in our form of government, the jury in the courtroom was to determine the constitutionality of the law and the justice of a law. And just because the judge says it was a law didn't mean it was the law. The jury had the right to overrule the judge They had the right to determine whether the law was right or wrong. Now, today the judges don't want you to know that. I was recently called down to the courthouse to be considered as a jury, and the judge said to the people there, first of all, we do not want you to be concerned about the law. We don't want you going to the law library. You will have to accept what I say the law says. You may not like the law. You may not agree with the law. But you're going to have to agree with what I tell you the law is. Does anybody here have any question with that? Well, of course, I seriously thought of putting my hand up and saying, I disagree with you because I believe the jury has the right to jury nullification of the law if they are unconstitutional and if they are unjust. So I did not, I'll have to admit, because as far as the case was concerned, it was a traffic case and somebody had been injured, and I didn't think a constitutional issue was here. But the fact that the judge would tell that to the jury before the trial means that the last thing that they want is for the jury to understand that they have the right to determine the law. And this is one of the last places where people can really have an influence of what's going on. But we have a self-perpetuating judicial system where, of course, the judges want to be the rulers and vie with the legislature as to who has the most power.
And therefore, the jury for most of these men and women is something that gets in their way of accomplishing their goal. And so they've got to manipulate and control the jury and not allow the jury to be independent to nullify bad laws as the jury was designed to do. Now, when you hear problems with the jury, many people think of outrageous examples like Stella Liebeck. I guess this was a number of years ago in the 90s, who bought a cup of coffee at McDonald's and driving down the road, set it in her lap to open the lid or whatever, and burned herself. And she did burn herself pretty severely, but to drive with a cup of hot coffee in your lap while you're opening the top, is a little questionable, and the jury awarded her a multi-million-dollar settlement, if I remember correctly. It was later reduced and so on. But there was an example that those kind of examples are repeated, often to make the point that people or those who are publishing those ideas are often trying to make the point that, look at juries, they're ridiculous. Juries can't be trusted to do justice. Juries are the problem, and that's often used as an illustration of that. But the problem is actually different than that. The problem is that juries, like your own experience, if you didn't have this knowledge, Dr. Stan, when you went down there to the courthouse, you would have believed what the judge told you. Oh, hey, the judge tells me to do X, Y, and Z. I'm to do what the judge tells me. I'm not to judge the law. That's what he has told me. And the problem is, therefore, many unjust, unconstitutional laws and many egregious actions on the part of the government, many tyrannical acts on the part of the government, go unchecked in the courtroom because a jury does not know its full powers and does not act as the final arbiter of what is just and unjust in our judicial system. And that's the purpose of the course that we put together here, is the duty of the jury, and we're actually in the process of filming this course and putting together a student notebook and all the details that will give people a working package, a turnkey program that they can communicate this, these lessons and these essential truths to people in their community. Because if we can stir up jurors across the country, teach them these truths that they're never going to hear in the courtroom, we can stop tyranny in the courtrooms of America with jurors who know what their powers are, who understand what their role is. And to do that, we need to kind of take a big picture view, first of all, of what is justice and how do you establish true justice. And we find that our founders knew where it came from. They referred to it, of course, in the Declaration of Independence when they talked about the just reasons why they could separate from Great Britain. They referred to the laws of nature and nature's God. That second phrase, the laws of nature's God, is a direct reference to the Bible. You can see William Blackstone for that. His exact quote of the laws of nature is his. The laws of nature, nature's God, is a paraphrase of his phrase, the revealed law, the Bible. And so the Bible is the source. In fact, you open the Word of God to the Epistle of James, and it says this in James 4, verse 12. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. Only one lawgiver, that's God, and only one judge, that is God, Therefore, for justice to be done in a society, it must follow the law of God. It must enact the law of God in its legislative branch, in its executive branch, and in its judicial branch. So if you're looking for true justice and want to measure what true justice is fulfilled when God's law is obeyed. You know, for example, the commandment says, thou shalt not steal. Well, we know that therefore there's property rights, and we can bring that into every decision regarding property rights. Not only somebody that shoplifts in a store, we obviously recognize that's a violation of thou shalt not steal, but how about when a government takes unjustly the property of a citizen for no good reason other than it wants more tax revenue from some other private individual who's going to own that property? That's another form of theft, another form of violating God's command, thou shalt not steal. And if a jury understands that their first measure when they're evaluating a law to determine if it is just is God's law, and as we know, need to know what God's law says and understand God's law and how it applies in civil society. And, of course, the Ten Commandments are the good foundation that gives us an understanding of what God's law says as a whole. John Witherspoon, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence and one of the most influential founders, because he taught at, the College of New Jersey, which ultimately became Princeton University, he taught numerous men who ultimately, some of them served as senators, congressmen, presidents. He taught those who were part of the Constitutional Convention. So not only did he sign the Declaration, and he was part of his own state's constitution and their ratifying convention, he was a very significant founder because he influenced students like James Madison was one of his students, the father of our Constitution. And this is what John Witherspoon said about the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are the sum of moral law. The sum, the totality. If you want the whole, the big picture, you've got it right there in the Ten Commandments. And Jesus kind of further expounded on that when a lawyer tried to trick him. The lawyer was asking him some trick questions to try to trap him. And the lawyer was asking, which is the first commandment of all? That is, which is the most important commandment? This is Mark chapter 12. And Jesus answered him, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's the two tables of the law. If you take the first table of the law, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second table of the law, love your neighbor as yourself. And so Jesus very succinctly summarized the two tables of the law, the greatest and the second greatest commandment, which in essence are what is just. A just society will see that people are given the freedom of religion to worship God in accordance with the dictates of their conscience, such that they are obeying the first table of the law to honor God in their worship, in their words, in their thoughts, in their time. The second table of the law, again, detailed ways in which we as people are to love our neighbor as ourselves. And so when our founders were asked the question and thinking about the issue of how do you establish a just society, they turned to the Bible as the foundation of all that ultimately became our great country. For example, George Washington said it's impossible to rightly govern without the Bible. That the Bible, God's Word, is the law book for our country. And it was the law book for England and the English common law that ultimately laid the foundation for law in our country. The greatest commentator on that English common law in the time of our founders, of course, was William Blackstone. And you read William Blackstone throughout, he's quoting Scripture, he's expounding on what the Bible says, because they knew that justice comes from God's law, that is, from the Bible. Furthermore, if you want to even look at the very structure of our government, that structure is given to us in the Bible. Isaiah chapter 33 and verse 22 says, "For the Lord is our judge. The Lord is our lawgiver. The Lord is our king. He will save us." So there you have the three branches of government that our founders followed, following it directly there from Scripture, that there's the judicial branch, the Lord is our judge, the legislative branch, the Lord is our lawgiver, and the executive branch, the Lord is our king. He will save us. So the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God are the foundation of all civil law and government in these United States of America. Now, when we further explore in Scripture what government is supposed to be doing, what's its job description, one of the most significant passages in this regard is Romans chapter 13. And it's a very interesting passage. I must caution you, often it's misinterpreted by people to say that it's saying that you must do whatever the government says. Government gives you a command, you must obey that command regardless of what that command is. That, my friends, is a misinterpretation of Romans 13. It does not say that, and let me just, you know, dip into the passage a little bit here to prove that it doesn't say that. It says, "For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he, that is the civil magistrate, is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. He does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil."
Let me just mention, we do carry a book on that subject. It's written by John Weaver, called The Christian and the Civil Government. And you get the book, you get my interview with him. I think it's very important people understand how to address the issue of Romans 13. Because believe me, in Hitler's Germany, the ministers were ordered to push Romans 13 to keep the people in line. And the same thing is happening in America today. And ministers have even been told, you should be pushing Romans 13 to keep the people under the authority of the government right here in America. Well, David Whitney, go right ahead.
Yes, that reminds me. I guess there was an article recently, or maybe it's a couple months back now, of Homeland Security recruiting thousands of pastors and, like you say, training them to say, use Romans 13 as your best tool to disarm the people. In other words, when they plan to disarm a community and take all their guns, that they're going to use pastors on the streets to tell people, obey your government. Romans 13 says that. No, notice what Romans says. We read this passage twice, it says here so far. The civil magistrate is God's minister. And let me just finish reading the passage and then comment on it. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. Well, because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Notice what it is clearly saying by repeating this phrase three times, that the civil magistrate is a minister of God. Now, that sounds like a pretty outlandish statement. The actual Greek term is diakonos, the term from which we get deacon. And you think of a deacon in a church, at least in most Baptist churches, a deacon is one of the highest positions someone can hold spiritually in that church. And here it's saying this civil magistrate is a deacon of God. And as God's minister, obviously, they are subject to God's law. They can't say, I'm going to do whatever I want. Like here in Maryland, yesterday, I guess it was the Senate, just passed a bill to redefine marriage. Going to the House, and this is egregious. These people are not acting as ministers of God. What are they doing? They're acting as ministers of Satan. Because you can only be in one or the other camp. You're either serving God or you're serving Satan. And to seek to overthrow marriage and God's obvious, clear standard of marriage, both biologically and biblically, is to be a minister of Satan, not a minister of God. And they're going to have to stand on Judgment Day, and they'll be hell to pay for all eternity if they don't repent before these people die. But here it says again, they're ministers of God, therefore very clearly they are subject themselves to the law of God. Which is why again and again throughout Scripture, when we have a civil magistrate commanding believers to do that which God had either not commanded them to do, or sometimes commanding them to do the exact opposite of what God commanded them to do, the godly believer disobeyed the civil magistrate because the civil magistrate was no longer acting as a minister of God. Instead, he was acting as a minister of Satan. We think of numerous examples. The book of Daniel contains his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refusing to bow down to the idol, being thrown into the fiery furnace because of their refusal. And Daniel himself refusing to abstain from all prayer to the true God, in order to pray to the king at that point, and he was thrown into the lion's den for doing that. You have the apostles in the New Testament. They refused to stop preaching in the name of Jesus, and they were commanded by the civil magistrate to stop preaching about the resurrection, stop preaching about Jesus, and they said, we ought to obey God rather than men. So whenever a civil magistrate, and it's being clearly spelled out here in Romans 13, whenever a civil magistrate steps outside of their God-ordained jurisdiction, whenever they command us to do something that either God has not commanded us to do or something completely opposite to God's command, we are not to obey them. And by the way, just referring to the Second Amendment, talking about that issue, when they command us to hand over our guns, God has commanded us the exact opposite. Jesus said to his disciples there in the upper room, as just before they went out to the Garden of Gethsemane, he said, if you don't own a sword, and by that he was referring to a small, short sword that would be used for personal defense, if you don't own one, sell your cloak and go buy one. Jesus told his disciples to be self-harmed.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney, and we've been discussing Romans 13 and how it is being misused today. And certainly David is pointing out that the Office of Homeland Security is recruiting ministers and telling them that when edicts are given by the government, they should be preaching Romans 13 and telling their parishioners, oh my goodness, you have to obey it. After all, that's what it says in the Bible. But that's not what it says in the Bible. And that's why you really need to read it very carefully. We are to obey the government when the civil magistrate is the agent of God. But what happens if he isn't? What happens, if he is an Adolf Hitler who's taking people to the concentration camps to kill them? Should we still obey Adolf Hitler? Should the Germans have obeyed Adolf Hitler? They obeyed him, and I saw the rubble that was Germany after the Second World War when I was stationed there as a medical officer. Should we be obeying government? Or should we simply go along with abortion and the murder of almost 50 million unborn children? Should we speak out against what the government is doing as far as the AIDS epidemic and targeting blacks? You realize that almost half of the people with AIDS in the United States are black, and that in Africa, why, in Botswana, 46% of the pregnant women are HIV infected. Should we be obeying the government that is bringing this horrible tragedy on the people of Botswana and the blacks of our own nation? Understand, ladies and gentlemen, we have a wonderful book written by Pastor John Weaver entitled The Christian and Civil Government. And when you get the book, you'll get a copy of the CD I did with my interview with Pastor Weaver, where he talks about this and raises all the questions that Pastor David Whitney raises. We have to understand that Romans 13 is being misused today by the people who hate God and intend to impose a dictatorship in America. So go right ahead.
So that's the first issue that we need to really understand what our founders meant in terms of justice. They were talking about God's law being obeyed in the civil society, and that therefore any piece of legislation that the legislature writes up, it's only valid if it is in full agreement with God's law. The laws of nature, nature's God. If it's not, it's null and void. The law is null and void, and it doesn't matter if the governor of the state signs it in, quote, and we say into law, or the president signs a bill into law. It's only true law if it's in agreement with God's law, the law of the universe, any more than a legislature could write a law that says, well, from here on, 2008 and forward, 2 plus 2 will no longer equal 4. 2 plus 2 will always now equal 5. Well, they can't change the laws of the universe. That's ridiculous. They can't change the laws of gravity and say, from now on, no one will fall from buildings because we just outlawed the law of gravity. We wrote a bill, the governor signed it into law, and the judges say, yeah, that's fine. Does that change the law of gravity? Of course not. See, the problem is people think that the moral laws of the universe are as changeable as whatever we, decide we'd like a different flavor of ice cream. We can change the moral laws of the universe. That's absolutely foolish. You can no more change those laws than you can change the laws of mathematics, the laws of chemistry, the laws of gravity. None of those laws can be changed. You'll only break your own neck trying to violate those laws. And so our state of Maryland, in its idiocy of heading towards redefining marriage as two sodomites sleeping together, if they do that, they're not going to change the law of marriage. They're actually spitting in the face of the Creator, calling God's judgment down upon a wicked and sodomite state, and they're going to break themselves and this entire state in trying to do that. They're not rendering justice at all by such an action. And so true civil magistrates, when they're doing what God has ordained them to do, they are subject to the law of God as ministers of the law of God. And therefore, justice is defined by God's law. God is actually the only being in the universe who is able to determine right from wrong. Let me repeat that, because many people don't really understand this principle. And our founders understood it very well. It's expressed throughout the Bible from Genesis 1 all the way down. God is the only being in the entire universe able to determine right from wrong. To say, this is right and this is wrong. You think of the original temptation that Adam and Eve faced there as Satan came to them in the garden, came to Eve first of all, and the original temptation was actually to overthrow the law of God. God had said, do not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The day you eat of it, you shall surely die. Satan came along and said, nah, you're not going to die. In fact, the day you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you're going to become like God. And notice what Satan says there in Genesis 3. You will know good and evil. That is, independently of God, you will be able to determine on your own what is good and evil without any regard to God's law, without any regard to God's command.
And, of course, this battle has been going on ever since then. There really is a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And believe me, the devil understands the Bible. He just interprets it a lot differently. We'll be right back here in just a moment after Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, you picked the story up there.
Well, going back there to the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve fell for it. They believed, oh, yeah, what a wonderful thing it would be to be morally independent from God, to say, I think this is right and I think that is wrong and I don't care what God thinks. I'm going to make up my own law. And that's essentially the temptation that they fell for, to become their own law and reject God's law. Establish themselves as an independent moral authority, free from the law of God, and establishing their own law. And, you know, I just mentioned the Maryland State Legislature. The federal legislature does the same thing, and the president and the governors, and all across our country, we have moral anarchy in our government because the government has determined that it is God, and as God, it therefore determines what's right and wrong. Now, don't you dare, as an individual citizen, go determine what's right and wrong. Don't you think that you could change the speed limit on your own, or don't you think that you can change this law or that law? Oh, no. They're going to show you that they are the boss, that they are God when they fine you or put you in prison. They're going to not let you change the law. No, but they're going about changing the law of God day by day, and it's evil. It's absolutely evil. And God issues a very stern warning to people like those who are destroying our nation today. And anybody who will subvert his law, this is what God says in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. God calls judgment down upon these people. He says they're going to face an eternal damnation for having opposed me, having sought to turn my law on its head. And we see this all the time. Somebody was telling me, I didn't see the interview, they were telling me about, Rosie O'Donnell just doing this, essentially, turning it on its head and saying, it's so evil, those people in the dark who throw stones at me and criticize me for being a lesbian, you know, and adopting all these children. I think she's adopted 4 children now. What a terrible thing to adopt children into a lesbian relationship where they don't see a normal husband and wife relationship. They have no idea what a real family's like. They get all their mind all twisted around with this sort of thing. And she's actually saying people who, like myself, believe what the Bible says, that lesbianism is a terrible sin. We feel sorry for the people who are you know, in bondage to that sin, but there's nothing about that sin that makes it just, good, or right. And she's calling people like myself bigots and all kinds of other names, and would like to see laws changed so that people like me are put in prison for saying such things as I'm saying right here on your show, Dr.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, I would like you to actually tell our listeners how they can get in touch with the Institute, what will happen if they do get in touch with the Institute, and why they should start putting on programs in their homes or in their local churches to teach people about the very foundation of our nation, which is never taught in schools today, because, of course, the people who want a dictatorship do not want the American people to realize that the people in Washington, D.C. are violating the very oath of office they've sworn to uphold and enforce our Constitution. So pick the story up.
That's right, and we invite people to get a hold of us. Our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. Again, that toll-free number for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. Or if they want to use our website, and we have a web store with many materials, I'll describe some of those in just a moment, but our website is iotconline.com, standing for Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com. And the host kit we offer, which is designed to be a turnkey method by which you can understand and learn and teach others the founding documents and give them a working knowledge of the Declaration, Constitution, Bill of Rights, and also give them an understanding of the worldview of our founders, who was a biblical worldview. They understood law and government as they understood the Word of God, and they understood that God's law basically governs how a society, a just society, is to be created. And in addition to that, we have various lectures on, and like I said, this jury course that we're currently filming, we're going to be putting that into a host kit of its own, that people can take this course and communicate this course to those in their community to spread the word. Because as you say, they're not going to hear it in the public school system. They won't hear it in the media. They're certainly not going to hear it in the courtroom. The true law, the true supreme law of our land is being suppressed, so that nobody hears about it. And therefore, that's why, Michael Peruca and his brother Steve decided to found Institute on the Constitution 8 years ago now, because they recognize there's a great ignorance in our land of what the true law is. And as we'll share later when we talk about the job of the jury to defend the Constitution, you can't do that job unless you know the Constitution well enough to be able to evaluate laws that come before you as a juror to determine if the law is in accord with the Constitution, if the law is comports with the laws of nature, nature's God, God's law given to us in the Bible. If you have that background, then you can do your job as a juror and prevent injustice from being enacted and prevent bad law from actually hurting your fellow citizens and doing injustice to your fellow citizens. So we encourage people to go to our web store, iotconline.com, that's iotconline.com, for resources, and you can also sign up there for an online version of our Foundations course. We know that sometimes people are busy and, you know, maybe they can't get out to a class on a regular basis during the week or whatever, but they really want to take the course, and we just started this last month, and we're getting a great response. There was more than 60 people as of yesterday who have signed up and have begun taking the course, and quite a few other people checking it out. We're encouraged because we want to see thousands and ultimately tens of thousands and even hundreds of thousands of Americans take a course where they understand the Constitution. Now we're offering it online as well as purchase a host kit and conduct a class where you gather a group of people together to do that. So our toll-free number as well is, let me repeat that again, is our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution, 866-730-9796.
And you've actually had courses in really in almost every state in the Union. These have been actually taught where people are beginning to learn the Constitution.
That's right. I just got an email today from a friend down in Fredericksburg, Virginia. There's three classes there that are going to graduate in April, and so inviting me to come down and speak to those graduating classes. And I tell people across the country that we will try to send someone from Institute on the Constitution to graduate their class if they have at least 25 people in that class who are graduating. We'd love to come and encourage them, give them a boost, a shot in the arm to take what they know and now spread that out around the community, because that's the way we're going to take our country back. It begins with knowledge. It doesn't end there. But if we don't have this fundamental foundational knowledge, we can't go forward in the battle that we have. We can't identify things being done in Washington, D.C., or things even being done in our state capital that are a violation of the supreme law of the land. And until we're able to do that and equipped to do that, we are not able to effectively fight this fight and restore our constitutional republic.
And, of course, one of the problems, because we have people in Washington, D.C., who do not believe in the Constitution, who do not believe in limited government, who do not believe, as our founding fathers did, that we should never go to war except to defend our own country. In fact, they didn't even want a standing army. They needed a navy because they needed knew that they needed to be able to guard the sea routes, but they did not want a standing army. Mm-hmm. They only wanted to raise an army in time of war. But you see, there are people who realize that the best way to really change a nation is to go from war to war to war to war. And the people get so wound up watching the wars. You know, and our boys going overseas to fight communism in Korea, fight communism in the Vietnam, all the time, of course, when our government is financing the very communist nations that we're fighting. And now, of course, we're involved in a war in Iraq. And then, of course, Al-Qaeda's there. But where is Al-Qaeda coming from? Well, they're really probably not more than 1,000 or so Al-Qaeda. And a lot of them are coming from Saudi Arabia, our good allies. Some of them are being funded by Pakistan. And, of course, we're giving money to Pakistan. It's giving money to the ISI that is funding both the Taliban in Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda down in Iraq. But you see, war is a very important thing. It's a wonderful distraction. And while we watch our boys coming home and we see the casualty numbers increase, why then at the same time, of course, we are losing our freedom here at home. So go right ahead.
Well, when we were talking back about the Garden of Eden and overturning God's law and human beings trying to establish themselves as an independent moral authority, I referred to a Rosie O'Donnell interview that a friend of mine heard and told me about that she's basically lambasting people like myself, saying that we're evildoers. I'm in the dark because I think lesbianism is a sin and a very sad abomination that I pray that she repents of before she dies and goes to hell for all eternity. That people like me, she says, are in the dark, and I'm throwing stones at her. She's in the light, is what she said in her interview. She's the righteous one. She's the good one. She's doing exactly what God condemned. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Like if you took a bottle of poison in your cabinet there and you put a label on that bottle and labeled it candy. Wow, what happens if your child gets a hold of that and drinks that candy? Does that change its nature? No, it'll kill them. Poison is always poison, no matter what label you put on it. Sin and evil is always sin and evil. And it's a great wickedness for any human being or any society. And to do what our society is doing today, changing the labels on what God has clearly labeled sin and evil, and now making those things instead of that, saying that they are good instead. When we consider our system of government, the U.S. Constitution is actually based on a biblical view of human nature. It's a very realistic view of human nature, because God knows what we're about. I mean, He created us, and He knows intimately our problem as sinners. And all men are created, first of all, as image bearers of the Creator. Therefore, human beings have dignity and rights, as our founders said, and as they were taking this right out of the Bible, we have those rights endowed by our Creator. They don't come from civil government. Civil government gives you no rights whatsoever. That's the whole problem, I think, with the phrase civil rights. No. Our founders spoke of God-given rights, not civil rights. And I think the civil rights campaign in the 60s and so on has sought to change people's thinking in this way, just to turn it slightly. And the idea is, oh, our rights come from the civil society. Oh, our rights come from government then, and so we want to fight with government to get our civil rights. No. Your rights come from God, not from civil government. And you have rights because God has endowed you. Your Creator has endowed you with those rights as His image bearers. All human beings are made in the image of God, and therefore all men are to be treated equally. They're to be treated equitably in a court of law. There should be no partiality in judgment that is given. And Scripture says this again and again. You read the Old Testament, particularly the prophets. they spoke with very harsh and condemning terms towards anyone who would treat with bias or because of bribery or wealth, treat individuals differently in the court of law. And let me just read one command here, and this is Deuteronomy 16, 19, and 20. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe. For a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. And God was, through Moses, God was warning the people of Israel, when you go into the promised land, don't take bribes. Don't treat any of your fellow citizens with partiality based on their wealth, their status, their race, their color, whatever it is. All human beings, because they're all created in the image of God, and therefore our image bearers are to be treated equitably in the court of justice. Now, therefore, one of the essential purposes for which our whole form of government was put together is stated right there in the preamble to our U.S. Constitution. It was to establish justice. That's right, establish justice. Well, today, many people don't think you really can establish justice, you know. They say, well, justice is in the eyes of the beholder. To Rosie O'Donnell, justice is a lesbian being able to adopt all these children. To me, that's a terrible injustice. It might even be akin to child abuse to those poor kids, especially when there's a long list of good, honest, heterosexual couples that would love to adopt, but they're on waiting lists 5, 6, 7 years. So they can't adopt kids. They don't have the kind of pull that she has. And that's what God's Word says. One of the essential purposes of government is to establish justice, and that's exactly what the preamble of our Constitution says. To establish justice is the purpose for our government. Furthermore, the organic laws of the United States include the Declaration of Independence. Many people, and I've had a debate with a history professor here in Maryland a number of years back, and he would contend that the Declaration and the Constitution have nothing to do with each other. That's a lie. That's a fat, big lie, 100% lie, because you open the U.S. Code and you go to the very first volume of the U.S. Code right at the beginning. The organic law of these United States includes the Declaration of Independence. It is the law. And that law, the Declaration, states that the very purpose for which civil government was formed was to secure the God-given rights and the God-given liberties that God the Creator has given to every human being. And that's why they said, wait a minute, King George III is not doing that. He's not doing the job of the civil magistrate according to God's Word, rendering justice, defending the, and securing the God-given rights of each of the citizens here in these colonies. He's failing to do that. Therefore, we have another God-given right, and that is to separate from Great Britain and form our own government, which will do just that. Secure the God-given rights of every human being in our society. So our U.S. Constitution was based on a very realistic view of human nature. Man is made in the image of God, having great dignity, value, and rights given to us by our Creator. But the second thing we need to know that our founders also very clearly stated is what the Bible says. All men are sinners. They are fallen creatures, and as we read there in Romans 13, that the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good. You'll have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. So all men are fallen creatures, and because of man's sin nature, there is a need for government. I know today, and certain circles, particularly among young people, I think there's a renewed interest in anarchy. There's a renewed desire to say, you know, this government is so bad and so tyrannical, and I would agree, this government has become so tyrannical, they say, the better alternative is no government at all. Anarchy. Everybody does what's right in their own eyes, their own mind, and some libertarians would tend this way, and other libertarians say, no, there's a standard of right and wrong, and so on. But there's a renewed interest in anarchy, because when tyranny sweeps in, as it has in our country, many people want the alternative, say, no, let's get no government. However, our founders understood, and the Bible clearly spells it out, that human governments, human civil governments are necessary because all men are fallen creatures. Even the best of us needs government to keep our fallen nature in check. And the biblical purpose of civil government is to punish the evildoer, as we just read in Romans 13, to punish the evildoer, to reward as well as to protect the righteous from the evildoer. That's the purpose of civil government.
But of course, the thing I think the most important thing to recognize is the fact that since all men are sinners, why would you want to give the people in government power over the lives of the people? Certainly you need certain functions of the government. But of course, as little government as is compatible mm-hmm. with any sort of an organized society, but since men are inherently evil, why would you want to put yourself under the authority of a king who is evil, or under the authority of a president who is evil? Yes, we need a certain amount of government, but we have to limit the power of government if we want people to be free. And the other thing is, of course, to recognize that liberty is dependent upon the virtue of the people, and the virtue of the people is dependent upon their relationship to the Lord. And once we turn against God, as we have in this country, we no longer have a virtuous people, we will no longer have liberty.
That's absolutely right. Peter expresses it this way in his epistle, 1 Peter 2:13 and 14, that the purpose of government is for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. Two things: punish the evildoers, praise the righteous. Well, we have that turned on its head in so many examples here in our government today, where they're praising the evildoers and punishing the righteous who are doing what is right. And this view of mankind, people would say, well, David, I don't see that written into the Constitution. And say, well, you may not. I see it there, but you may not believe it. How about reading James Madison, who's usually called the father of our Constitution? How about what he said in Federalist Number 55? He said, as there is a degree of depravity in mankind which requires a certain degree of circumspection and distrust, he said it very clearly, mankind is depraved, and therefore there needs to be boundaries put around him. Then he goes on to say, so there are other qualities in human nature which justify a certain portion of esteem and confidence. Republican, that's small r, the form of government, not the party, republican government presupposes the existence of these qualities in a higher degree than any other form. That is both the depravity of man as well as the esteem, the value of man.
Once more, I'd like you to get your telephone number out, the Institute.
It's 866-730-9796.
866-3-what?
866-730-9796.
Let me suggest you get in touch with them and begin getting this information out. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I'm laying this groundwork because it's important to understand the philosophy and the view of our founders, because if we don't understand the purpose of government and we don't understand the foundation of what law is, then it's very difficult to evaluate laws. And I think that's why most Americans today are kind of in this quagmire. It's like, well, you know, kind of law is whatever the government says it is. That's a very, very dangerous thing. You mentioned Adolf Hitler earlier, and he changed the laws of Germany overnight in many, many instances, and other laws were changed over time. And so what was obviously unlawful, according to the laws of nature and nature's God, became lawful in Germany. And we are headed that way with abortion is just one example, but euthanasia, the growing drive towards euthanasia across our country. These things that change what people perceive to be right. That is, people tell me, oh, abortion has to be right. It's legal. I might not like it personally. You know, I don't think it's a good thing to kill babies. But, you know, it's legal. Therefore, it can't be wrong. Changes people's thinking about what is right and wrong, because they don't have an absolute standard to work from. Say, well, no, I can evaluate any law that exists by an outside standard. And that goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where Satan put the temptation before Adam and Eve. Ah, go ahead and make up your own law. You know, just whatever you think law is what it should be. And they did. And they paid dearly for it, and the rest of humanity fallen through them as paid as well. Because the reality is, you cannot change the law of the universe. But you will break yourself in violation of the law of the universe. And a society like ours is headed for a calamitous disaster as we continue to break and violate God's law time and time again. We cannot get away with this forever. There will be a payday, and that payday is coming quicker perhaps than many of us are prepared for. James Madison also said, let me just close with this quote, in Federalist 51, he said, the need for government flows from the fact that all men are fallen creatures with a sinful nature. Wow, look at that statement of one of our founders, the father of the Constitution, says that all men are sinful, they have sinful natures, they're fallen creatures, and the only reason you need government in the first place is because that all human beings are fallen and sinful. But what is government itself but the greatest of all reflections on human nature? If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. Framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, that is the people, and in the next place you must oblige it, the government, to control itself.
Okay, God bless. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stan.
Our guest has been Pastor David Whitney. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Of course, it really, we have a real problem. People have forgotten the fact that liberty and limited government are synonymous, and tyranny and total government are synonymous. We're moving towards a dictatorship in America. They're collecting dossiers on every American citizen. Of course, in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, Alder, in the 1980s. If you read the book, The Devil's Game, you'll find out how the Central Intelligence Agency created and financed Al-Qaeda. We carry the book, The Devil's Game. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, that nothing is it appears to be. The question is, why have we never caught Osama bin Laden, the wicked Osama bin Laden? What if you go to the FBI page, 10 Most Wanted, Google it in, FBI, Osama bin Laden, 10 Most Wanted, and read the description of why Osama bin Laden is wanted? Not one mention of the attack on the Twin Towers and of September 11th. He's wanted, of course, for an attack on our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. But I guess the FBI's never understood that he was really behind what happened on 9/11. Or was he behind what happened on 9/11? Are we being lied to? Are they using the threat of Al-Qaeda and Islamic terrorism to take away our freedom? Step by step, we're being increasingly watched and regulated and controlled, and they're using certainly all of this new legislation to suspend the rights of the American people in the name of course, defeating the wicked Osama bin Laden, whose family was very close to the Bush family. In fact, immediately after the September 11th attack, there were a number of members of Osama's family here, and they all got very special treatment and allowed to leave the country. And you have to ask yourself, why would they get special treatment, the family of this brutal murderer who just killed 3,000 Americans? Well, ladies and gentlemen, nothing as it appears to be. If you'd like to understand what happened on September 11th, you need to get our three pamphlets, Foreknowledge 911, or my final pamphlet on the subject, The True Story of 9/11. They're inexpensive, but a tremendous amount of information there that will help you better to understand. Osama bin Laden was a wicked man, but he was put in power and kept in power by our own Central Intelligence Agency. If you would like to get the book, See No Evil, written by Robert Byrd, who is actually a CIA agent working in Iraq during the 1990s, he will tell you he never met an Iraqi who did not believe that the American government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And time and again, as he points out in his book, when members of the Iraqi military risked their lives trying to overthrow Saddam, why, they were betrayed by the American State Department. Now, why would they have done something like that? The book is See No Evil by Robert Byrd, and we still carry that in stock. The other book, of course, is See No Evil, and then, of course, my pamphlets on Foreknowledge 911, and then, of course, on The Real Story, The True Story of 911. If you'd like to hear our interviews with Jimmy Walters, we have these interviews, my interviews with William Rodriguez, the last man out of the Twin Towers. We have two interviews, two four-tape sets. One is called 911. One's called Update 911. We have another on why did the buildings come down? Because, of course, there's a very real question as to why Building 7 came down. at 5:20 in the evening after the attack in the morning. Why did Building 7 come down? Well, we actually interviewed a man who was there the following day, who was actually worked on building demolition, and his opinion was, in all probability, that Building 7 came down because of a controlled demolition. Now, how did Osama bin Laden manage that? Did you ever wonder why?